This is the second hour of a tribute to jazz guitarist Kenny Poole. I got a letter from musician Tom Schofield, who recorded with Kenny on the album Custom Blend. Here's one of his memories. Of all the spots I heard Kenny perform, the Heritage holds the fondest memories. Located just east of Marymount, the original structure dates back to pre-Civil War days. Kenny was a longtime fixture in the pub area. Seated next to the fireplace, hunched over his Hofner guitar, the perennial cigarette clenched between his teeth, a cup of coffee and red-tipped can sitting on top of his amp, it was magic time. Let's continue now with the rest of the roundtable discussion. Five musicians, Larry Nager, Marcos Sastry, Andy Brown, Wayne Yeager, and Katie Lauer, on a tribute to Kenny Poole.
I sure did learn a lot of music from Kenny. Like early on, we would get together during the day and play. During the 70s, especially we went through that whole like electronic, I remember I was thinking about that, with that electronic period, like Miles at the Fillmore, and we were listening to a lot of that and trying to recreate some of that. And he really loved that stuff because it was so spontaneous and a lot of free form, and he could just like go in all kinds of directions, and I liked it too. And we were fooling around with that. We could very seldom ever do that in a club, but he touched on that. When I met him, he was playing with that band with Jimmy McGarry. The Grodek Whipper Jenny was one of the names of that, one of those bands. And
yeah, they did an album even. I have one of them, and there's like just some free pieces on it. Kenny plays.
Yeah, Grover Mooney. Yeah. And
it was funny because he did like a solo free piece. It was called Iberian Melancholia.
Yeah.
So I'd come into the club and I'd say, "Hey, Kenny, how about a little Iberian Melancholia?" You know, and he would kind of be like, "Oh, I don't want to do that stuff." But that's what's funny is, when I heard him, he was pretty much doing, bossa nova standards kind of stuff. But that's funny because he would talk about that too. I almost can't imagine it, but he would talk a lot about a lot of different free jazz, like Jimmy Giuffre's trio with Paul Blay and Steve Swallow, and he'd really was really enthusiastic about a lot of that stuff, where you would think, oh, this guy, he doesn't like that. I mean, he had a really broad, he'd talk about Indian music that he listened to, and
that surprises me.
He had a really, he was way into classical music too. I mean, he was very versed in that. I mean, he could play you movements from Peer Gynt. I remember seeing him at an opening of a liquor store. It was like in Hyde Park, in that area, where there's like, it's a little plaza there. And he literally, that's how into him I was. I would just try to find wherever he was playing. And he had this grand opening of this big liquor store.
Yeah.
And so I would go in and I'm looking for a chair to sit in, and I sat there. And he started playing this thing. And I said, "What is that? It's so beautiful." And he said, "It's Oz's Death from Peer Gynt." And I was like, wow, this guy is heavy, man.
Yeah. He's the one that introduced me to the Bill Evans, Jim Hall's stuff, because I didn't know about that before I met Kenny.
I have some recordings of Kenny and Wayne, and they really, captured that, and really, I listen to it all the time. I mean, Wayne sounds incredible, and the two of them together, there's a lot of great tunes. I mean, hopefully we can get that out someday, because it's really good.
It's a shame to end this without mentioning Margene Wisby, because she had so many Kenny stories, and of course she died about shortly afterwards, but she always told the story about Kenny coming in and trying to sell her light bulbs. And we all remember about Kenny and the Earth Shoes, where he went and bought all these Earth Shoes, and the Surgeon General immediately released a warning that you would get some terrible paralysis of the spine if you wore them. But he decided to start selling light bulbs. And he told Margie, he says, "I don't need any light bulbs." And he was trying to convince her that she did. And then he wanted to buy the light bulbs she had. It just turned into a long conflict. That Margene would fall under her Kenny, the Prince of Darkness story.
Right.
I mean, that's one thing, just like we were touching on, just his personality. I mean, I just want to throw in is that it was actually a really, not just a personality quirk or something like that, but really a core thing with him, which I really think related to his music and stuff too, but really in his life, like, was his not wanting to waste anything. You know, I mean, it's kind of, everyone jokes about it, and I mean, he maybe did take it to like a certain high degree, but actually, I mean, he was very, there was a very thought out, researched philosophy. You know, the books that he had read and the sort of philosophies that he had studied, I mean, it was pretty serious. Like, he really...
He couldn't believe how what people threw
yeah.
away.
And he wasn't going to waste anything, you know. Yeah. He would always take the coffee. I mean, that's like the big legend. He would take, but he did. I mean, he would bring an empty thermos, and when he was done playing the gig, he would take the coffee home and say, they're just going to throw it out. I'm going to drink it.
His James Brown stint?
That's a good one.
Oh.
Now, you know, and he would play that down. He wasn't very, you know. But we were playing, when he came and played with the Bluebirds early on. We were playing at Allen's Cafe. We had a line of guitar players, and that was myself, Timmy and Larry Goshorn, and Kenny. And Kenny would come out and bring like a rock rig and play with us and play R&B. And, of course, blow us all out the door. But we were playing this James Brown tune. And everybody's head snaps because he's playing the second or third part that no one plays when you play that tune. We went up to Bam Powell night later. I said, Kenny, that part you're playing. He goes, yeah, I played it on the record. He played with James Brown for 4 years, right? Yeah. Wayne probably knows more about
it.
Was
that
he said he was never fined. You know, James is the big dance by you. Five bucks. Never tipped only. Never fined by James Brown.
That
now, that's some concentration for 4 years and never make a mistake.
I mean, a lot of musicians would have played with James Brown for 4 years, but would have made mistakes just because their minds would have been wandering or they're, you know, bored or not respecting what they were doing. But that's another aspect of his personality, is that if he's going to do it, it's going to be...
And when you would bring that
mistakes.
Up, he would go...
Yeah, he didn't want to talk about it.
He wasn't proud of it, but he would kind of, when he told that story, he was kind of proud of it.
Well, I remember one time playing on his guitar, playing the kind of classic James Brown ninth chord lick, you know, and like I was kind of messing with that. He's like, no, it doesn't go like that. And he grabbed the guitar, yeah. He's like this. You know, he really got into it. I was like, wow. Yeah, you know, he could do it.
Or he'd play some, we'd be playing with us, and he'd play some just outrageous, like, line, you know, some Latin line in a groove or something. I go, Kenny, that was really cool. He goes, it works for all occasions.
Yeah. I don't guess he ever did the broad and girdle fitting clinic at Chilitos, though.
He might have.
Band did that.
Did you?
Oh. He could find gigs where there were no gigs before, I'll tell you.
Yeah, where no other gig is gone.
But this half-price books and music gig is good because there's not a lot of noise. The problem with my audio recordings, even from that Jimmy D's one, is there's so much background, you know, conversation. But this half-price books and music thing, there was nobody there except me. So.
Well, you know, when we recorded him, we would use a line and a microphone, and we always had to do the line only because there was so much noise. Yeah. And I asked him, I said, Kenny, how do you... He said he actually liked the noise. When he'd go, when he would go into the trance, he liked the noise.
Yeah.
So. Oh, he was just perverse.
Well, that's true too. But he said, you know, that was his.
Whatever.
How can you be playing this beautiful piece, you know, and it's real quiet. Some lady would go, oh my, you know, and he'd yell something right in the middle of it. How do you play? And he just.
I mean, that's probably the reason for the trance. I mean, I like what Katie always said, like Cal's called it the bubble, you know,
the
pull
bubble.
The bubble down over you. And, you know, because people always say that. How do you play, you know, when there's people talking? You're totally.
I think it's just from doing it forever.
Yeah, just do it.
Pull the bubble down, baby.
Your entire life, you know.
It's just the nature of
you're uncomfortable
the thing.
When it's quiet. You know?
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing, too. When you're actually someone's listening to you, you think, I got to do something now.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do?
You know, I don't remember Kenny ever calling me anything. Most of the musicians had some kind of nickname, but I don't remember him even calling me Katie. Do you remember him calling you by name? Did he call you Jaeger or Wayne?
Wayne.
He called me Marcus forever.
Marcus.
Never got to Marcus. Always Marcus.
When was the last time you saw Kenny?
Day before he died. Yeah. And he was in really good spirits. He was being helped along at that point by various drugs. And we weren't doing a lot of talking. I mean, mean, there wasn't a lot of talking going on. We were just kind of hanging out. He had just recently seen that video that they did, the finger picking people, and he was pretty happy with that. And I think he had some sort of comment about, he looked heavenward and went, "Take that, Cal."
That's a closer if I ever heard it.
Something like
that. Take that, Cal.
Yeah,
I didn't get to make it back that week he was there in hospice, but I came back a bunch of times from Chicago, and we had some pretty intense hangs, you know. I mean, somebody like that who's going through something like that. I mean, it's, again, I mean, you know, just special in a way that somebody, like, he's going to do everything in life. He's going to do it fully. So he's going to do that fully. You know, we had some way out talks about everything from the nature of the universe. I mean, you know, just some heavy stuff that, you know, was very moving and insightful and important. You know, I mean, he wasn't the type of guy in any way to shy from reality or the truth.
No.
So he wasn't going to beat around the bush. You know, I'd drive 5 hours from Chicago and get out of the car, and I'd see him, and we'd just go right into it. You know, I mean, he would just bring it right to the fore, and we'd just go into it.
I went to see him before he went into hospice at his house, the last house he was in, and he had stacks of newspapers. It was kind of like a maze.
I had the same experience as Wayne's. I went in after my gigs. I was going up to see him, and that was sort of the same experience. And he was just, you know, humorous, and I don't know if I would have that strength or be that brave as he was. He had the opportunity to go the chemotherapy route.
Chemo, yeah.
And said, no, I'm not going to do it. I want to be awake and functioning and know exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. Take care of all my business and have it done.
Hi, I'm Fred Hirsch, talking about Kenny Poole. Thinking back, I think the first time I heard Kenny Poole was at a very strange establishment out in Western Hills. The name escapes me, but I remember the decor was kind of unmistakable. It had a little bandstand area with bales of hay and a little fence. It was a country bar of some sort. He was playing six-string electric bass. Cal Collins was playing guitar, and Terry Moore was playing brushes. I think in all the years that I heard Terry Moore play, he never picked up a stick, or I never heard him pick up a stick. Of course, Kenny being a great guitarist, and Cal being a great guitarist, and Kenny playing the bass guitar, which is basically a guitar but lower, it was a really actually unique and wonderful sound. And when I was first starting out, occasionally I dragged my Fender Rhodes out there and hoist it over the little fence onto the bandstand and sit in. And Kenny was always incredibly kind to me. He was the first person who introduced me to a real bossa nova. He was a big admirer of João Gilberto and could play bossa nova and Brazilian music beautifully. We played a number of times at a place over in Clifton called the Family Owl. I remember one night we just played duo, and I was really into duo playing. I still am. And piano and guitar is not the easiest combination of instruments because both can do so many of the same things, and there's often conflicts with harmony and rhythm. But even at that time, and with my undeveloped level of playing, I remember it being really easy. He was just such a natural player. Always had a beautiful, dark tone. Knew a lot of tunes. I've been living in New York 30 years, and in around 1983, I opened a small recording studio, and that's where Jimmy McGarry recorded basically his only album, Palindrome. Basically, we chipped in and flew Jimmy up to New York, and Michael Moore, the bassist, who was from here, and Joey Barron and I did a quartet date with him, which thank God we did, because that's the only thing that really survives of Jimmy McGarry. And I wanted to do the same with Kenny Poole, and I called him and I said, look, you know, why don't you come up here and I'll give you some studio time. You decide who you want to play with you and let's make a recording. And Kenny was very adamant about not wanting to do that. He definitely downplayed his own gifts. I mean, I know that he made some recordings later for J-Curve, but I just wish that in his prime, he would have been recorded with a trio or some intimate situation or even solo guitar, because it's sad that there just isn't that much of him left. But he was certainly a very important part of the scene and, you know, always very warm and friendly and a great guy to be around and read a lot, very kind of deep thinking person. And, you know, I definitely miss him.
My name is Jim Anderson. I'm a local bassist. Jazz bassist. I am the co-leader and co-founder of the Cohesion Jazz Ensemble, which has been an ensemble since 1973. And, you know, it's funny because Kenny and I, we really didn't play a whole lot together. Like, I met or knew of Kenny probably in the late 60s, early 70s. Kenny was quite particular about who he played with. I was very fortunate to be on his list as one of the bassists or musicians that he liked playing with. Kenny was a quiet player, but yet you could feel the underneath energy. You just could not slack with Kenny. Kenny knew the chords, he knew the melody, he knew the concept and everything. And I'm sure you either have or you will hear about the stories when Kenny would be on a gig and there would be a buffet or food, and during the break or afterwards, Kenny would make sure he had food in his pockets, bags, case, or whatever. And I miss Kenny. I just hope that we, those that that are left here, can keep that level and keep that spontaneity that Kenny exuded throughout his playing and his personality. Again, you know, Kenny was quiet. You know, he would say some funny things. He would crack me up. Take care, Kenny. Peace.
Bob Nave here with vocalist Larry Kinley, and talking a little bit about a great friend and a great musician, Mr. Kenny Poole. What are some of the things about Kenny that you remember with the kinds of things that will put a smile on your face?
Well, that's very easy, because Kenny was probably, in my estimation, the most clever musician I had ever met. Clever in a very dry way, but you couldn't be around him more than 3 minutes without him saying something make you just crack up every single time. It was almost as if he was never in a bad mood. I remember I was singing out on the patio at Blind Lemon. Kenny came in with I had never seen him before. He walked in and he had what looked like an old guitar. I mean, the guitar case had a lot of age to it, and he was just just a very nondescript looking cat who came in, sat down, and listened to me sing. And on the intermission, when we took an intermission, he says, "I sure like the way you sing." And I said, "Well, thank you. That's very nice of you." He said, "Let me ask you something. Do you think it'd be all right if I played a song with you?" And I said, "Well, I don't have any problems with that, but let me check with the band, because I don't want to step on anybody's toes." No conflict here. Right. So I cleared it with the band, and I said, "There's a guy who wants to play a couple of songs with me." Oh, Bob, when he took that guitar out and sat down next to me, he says, "What do you want to play? What do you want to sing?" I said, "Well, since you got a guitar there, why don't we do some, maybe a bossa nova?" Now, why did I say that? Why did I say bossa nova? I didn't realize that Kenny Poole, even as far back as 1969, was already a virtuoso. The minute he started playing, I don't know if it might have been something as simple as The Girl from Ipanema, but the intro that he played made me immediately realize that this guy was something special. And I knew right then that from that evening on, I was going to have to work with him. And sure enough, about a month later, he and I got a job together downtown at what used to be Stouffer's, I think, four nights a week, Wednesday through Saturday. And that started probably one of the greatest experiences of my life, to be able to work with a guitar virtuoso, who also became just an absolutely fabulous friend.
Phil DeGreg about Kenny Poole.
Well, first of all, he's a magnificent musician. We talked a lot about Brazilian music because we both have a strong interest in it. And I sometimes, on his gig over at, when he was doing the Heritage and doing this, sometimes I'd haul an electric piano over there and just play with him just for fun.
Just to do it?
Yeah, just to play some of the tunes. I mean, he knew all of them. And I would be learning one or learning another, and I'd try it. And it didn't matter what key, because he was such a great musician. Whatever key I happened to learn, and he would be right there. And I used to enjoy doing that. Yeah, we all miss him.
Bob Nave here with jazz pianist Steve Schmidt, and we're talking about guitarist Kenny Poole. And I know you had some wonderful memories of Kenny.
I guess I first started hearing him when I was in high school, but I would go to places like Whitey's on Coleraine Avenue, and he played there with Cal. I guess Cal had a gig there, and Kenny would also play.
He had an electric guitar that he detuned it, I guess, an octave lower, mm-hmm. and was playing pretty much bass lines, but he'd also played some chord things, because I used to come down from Oxford to go to Whitey's on Coleraine. It was odd. Was it a Monday night or a Sunday night? It was kind of an odd night.
Yeah, but I remember the old sort of corral bandstand, you know, with the, like, wooden fence, you know. But then also would hear him up at, up on Calhoun Street, the building that had the Family Owl in it, mm-hmm. and they had a club on the third floor, and on the ground level was Hoagie's Candlelight Cafe. They had a piano in there, would have trios, and then you could go upstairs. It was called A Step Above, I think. But that's where I first saw Cal, or, you know, first time seeing Cal Collins and Popeye Maupin. So I would see Kenny up there, and so the main thing is there were great musicians in Cincinnati, you know, a whole generation of guys that I was able to go hear and that you know, that's how I learned to play, by going to hear them and eventually getting to play with them. Kenny was so much an important part of those guys. And, you know, it's funny. I was lucky enough all those years at the Blue Wisp, backing up different people, to play with some of the great guitar players. Herb Ellis, Tal Farlow, Mundell Lowe.
Jimmy Rainey.
Gosh, Jimmy Rainey, indeed. But even some of, you know, even those great guitar players, lots of times they would do an intro to a tune and sort of like, okay, here's my little chordal thing, and then go into single line stuff, which was great. But it just made me think, wow, Kenny's really incredible. He really knows what he's doing in that vein.
That was O Grande Amore, recorded by Steve Schmidt in the studio of WVXU in honor of Kenny Poole. April Aloisio is a jazz singer here in Cincinnati who performed with Kenny on her CD, Close Your Eyes. This is How Insensitive.
Insensatez que você fez, coração, mas sem cuidado fez, jura de dor, o seu amor, um amor tão dedicado. Ah, porque você foi fraco assim, assim tão desalmado. Ah, meu coração, quem nunca amou, não merece ser amado. Vai, vai, meu coração, ouvirás a usa sua sinceridade. Quem semeia vento desarrasa, colhe sempre tempestade. Vai, 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 meu coração, pede perdão, perdão, apaixonado. Vai, vai, porque quem não pede perdão não é nunca perdoado. Bye-bye.
husband, April Aloisio, is here, and I know that you recorded with Kenny and have some thoughts about Kenny Poole, the man and the guitarist.
Yes. Well, I was just so lucky to have been singing with Kenny over the years. A lot of duo gigs, just guitar and voice. Kenny just had that Brazilian soul, and we connected so deeply with that Brazilian music, I would say, that that was our connection. I was just thinking about a gift that Kenny gave me. It was a wooden box that he had found at a thrift store, which Kenny was always going to the thrift stores, and it had Brazil on the top of it, and he cleaned it up and shined it up and gave it to me as a Christmas present.
Pianist Philip Burkhead here also in the studio, and Philip, I know you had some gigs with Kenny and a relationship with him, and what are some of the things that come to mind when you think about Kenny Poole?
Well, there were several times actually where I played gigs where Kenny played bass, and he would walk in with an electric bass and he'd sit down, and he was always just very unassuming, you know, he would certainly make some jokes here and there, but for the most part, he came in, he'd sit down, and he would play his changes. So you were going to play his changes no matter what, if he was playing bass. At first, it took a little getting used to, because, you know, as you know, probably a lot of musicians bring a fake book, but pretty much Kenny came ready to play, and he'd play what he played, and you played with him.
And he knew so many songs.
That is correct.
Hundreds of songs.
I think kind of a funny story that I remember is we were over at a club and kind of a restaurant situation, and all the musicians ended up in the break room at the same time, and then we were all playing in different parts of the establishment. And there were these coffee pots and these bun coffee makers all over the place. And Kenny decided, well, I think I'm going to make myself some coffee. So he got three of these things running at one time. And I think he filled them a little too much water. And Steve Schmidt was there, and Steve said, hey, Kenny, I think you got a problem. And these things were all running over. And so everybody's scrambling to find, you know, coffee pots and coffee cups and whatever. But Kenny got out of there with his thermos plenty full.
With coffee.
With coffee.
Yeah. I remember, you know, Kenny would occasionally come to my house, and we would do what, you know, music people do. We would sit around, we would listen to music and talk about music. Kenny also had a tremendous love for science fiction novels. He used to revel in reading this stuff. I also was amazed at when he was remodeling his house over on Ivanhoe in Norwood, how some of the very interesting things that he found in scrap yards and thrift stores and whatnot that he employed in decorating his abode. But one of the funniest things I remember, it was Bentley's, and I can't remember it was a gig with Judy Roberts or whom, but Kenny was wearing a black and white striped shirt, and somebody was giving him the business about whatever. And he looked squarely at the audience and stepped up to the microphone. He said, but only the top half committed the crime. I would say that almost anyone in Cincinnati who is a musician or close to music or knew Kenny have these remembrances of Kenny, the light side and the dark side. Kenny was a consummate guitarist, and I think he was as good as many other guitarists worldwide, but chose not to leave Cincinnati and go out on the road in New York and travel and do all that. He just stayed here and played, and what a great player he was, and most interesting person.
Thank you. sale, advertising young love for sale. Love that's fresh and still unspoiled, love that's only slightly soiled, love for sale. Who will buy? Who would like to sample my supply? Who would like to pay the price for a trip to paradise? Love for sale. Let the poets pipe of love in their childish way. I've known every type of love better far than they. If you want the thrill of life, I've been through the mill of love. Old love, new love, every love but true love for sale. Advertising young love for sale. If you want to try my wares, pay the price and climb the stairs. Love for sale. Way. I've known every type of love better far than they. If you want the thrill of love, I've been through the mill of love. Old love, new love, every love but true love for sale. Advertising young love for sale. If you want to try my wares, pay the price, climb the stairs. Love for sale. Love for sale. Love for
Love for Sale by Liz Anthony from her duet CD with Kenny Poole on guitar and bass. Custom Blend is an album of vintage swing, ballads, and Latin recorded in 2001 with Kenny Poole on guitar. Tom Schofield plays clarinet and tenor with Lynn Scott doing vocals and percussion work on the CD. Here's Joe Beams, Once I Loved. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for joining us for this tribute to Kenny Poole. And again, please introduce yourselves.
I'm Katie Lauer.
Andy Brown.
Marcus Sastry.
Wayne Yeager.
And Andy.
Just wanted to say, you know, thanks to everyone that put this together. I really appreciate it and think I know it's hard work to put something like this together, and it's really special that the people took the time out of their lives and put this together for Kenny, because he sure deserves it.
It's too easy to let somebody like Kenny go by. I think everyone's busy, and you know, just things tend to keep rolling, and it's hard to remember things even. So it's
painful.
Yeah. It's good to keep this going, and he's a great musician, and people will be, I think, as you were saying, the legend will grow and spread.
Sure will.
You've been listening to a tribute to jazz guitarist Kenny Poole on the first anniversary of his death. He was loved by jazz fans and musicians alike. His friend Tom Schofield wrote this about Kenny's career. Kenny made the local jazz club scene with Cincinnati's top players. Among others, he worked with pianist Frank Vincent, Wayne Yeager, Ed Moss, and sax legend Jimmy McGarry. He was at home playing a huge variety of styles. He played traditional Dixie at the DeFelice Cafe, straight-ahead jazz at Babe Baker's Reading Road Club, experimental jazz and bop at the Eminon, and freeform jazz in Mount Adams with David Matthews and Jimmy McGarry. On occasion, Ken would switch to electric bass and work with Frank Vincent, Cal Collins, and Jimmy Madison to produce some of the most tasteful chamber jazz to come out of Cincinnati. A fitting summary of Kenny Poole's work. I'd like to thank Larry Nager for his help with the roundtable, as well as Palmer Moore from the Ohio Fingerstyle Guitar Club, who recorded Kenny Poole's last concert, The Deep End of the Pool, on January 21, 2006. A special thanks also to Grant Smirlakis, whose efforts to honor his friend brought this project to fruition. You can find links in the playlist on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Lee Hay, and this was a tribute to Kenny Poole on 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati.